Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into a storm of spoilers. From brightest day to Sunday nights, no episode escapes our sight. Let those who want plot details light beware our power. The spoilers might. This podcast is split into two sections, the calm and the storm. In the first calm section, we're discussing the second episode of Lanterns on HBO, a television series that exists in a wider Warner Brothers DC universe. This season, the second storm section is reserved for the trailers, like this week's tease about episode 3, and not direct knowledge of any upcoming episodes. We're not ruining, we're enriching.
Brightest day.
In blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light.
Hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I'm pretty sure I couldn't manifest anything while unconscious.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I am wondering if Hal Jordan needs a roommate who consequently does not pay rent. And welcome back to A Storm of Spoilers. He's got so much room. Before we get started on this week's episode of Lanterns, we're going to tell you what's coming up and how you can get in touch with us. What's coming up? More Lanterns. You guessed it. That's right. We've got 8 of these. We're only through 2 of them. So next week we'll be back on Lanterns. I don't believe they're taking a break at any point. So it's just going to be 8 straight.
It seems like from initial reactions, we've picked the good show this season. So good news. We're back with more Lanterns.
Very highly rated HBO prestige Sunday night television is back. Shout out to House of the Dragon for trying. Here's how you can get in touch with this show, which many of you did this week. I'm very proud. You can send us a raven, of course, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Questions, corrections, theories, lore. As we discussed last week, neither of us could be considered extremely knowledgeable in Green Lantern lore. Knowledgeable, sure, but extremely knowledgeable, not quite. So feel free to send us your theories and thoughts. We're going to get into some of those this week. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a 5-star rating. Say whatever you want. I did this week, Dave, spend some money to subscribe to a service called Pod Rover, which is the one we were using a free trial previously. but it allows me to pull all of the reviews together from all over the world, because I was like, am I missing something? I don't see any reviews. Turns out I am not missing anything. We didn't get any new ones this week, but it did allow me to go back and pick out an older one that I don't think we read during House of the Dragon, because we actually did get a bunch there. So here's a slightly older review from Tracy with an I, who says, shame, shame, shame. Love Dave and Neil's analysis, humor, and guidance through Westeros and other fictional locales. After listening for years, I am now 100% into the spoilers. Thank you. This is one thing that will happen to you if you listen long enough. You will embrace the storm. And hopefully in the next week, you embrace writing us a review. That would be pretty awesome. You can also get us over at YouTube, youtube.com/@astormofspoilers, where you can see us do this podcast in video form. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you like each pod, and make sure you hit the little bell icon that alerts you to when there's new content from our YouTube channel, because that's fun. And finally, the most important thing, if you would like to materially support this entire podcasting venture that we have, unsponsored, unbought, completely independent and funded by you over at patreon.com/DaveNeil, DaveNeil. You get the warm feelings of knowing that you're keeping this whole thing going, and you get more podcasts, a weekly.
I want to try doing this, Neil, because I did this live in person this weekend with some friends.
Okay.
Here on Storm Spoilers, we watch currently airing shows week to week for free on multiple platforms. If you want to do that, awesome. If you join Dave and Neil at any level, you get a podcast where Neil and I not only sort of like shoot the shit and let you know what we think about like current topics in like gaming and pop culture every week. But we also do a very specific deep dive on a movie weekly. And then at the end of the month, we do a mailbag episode. So you could ask Neil and I questions about stuff that we maybe didn't cover over that. And then if you join our Patreon at the small council level, you get a rewatch project, which is like Storm of Spoilers, but time traveling through the past. And that's fitting because we're currently on season 3 of Netflix's Dark that has a lot of different timelines. So we have a lot of different types of coverage, but sort of a channel for each flavor if you want. And if you want them all, subscribe to the Patreon, subscribe to A Storm of Spoilers.
Fantastic.
And you're getting like 3 podcasts a week.
So many podcasts, so many experiences. This week is mailbag week, consequently. So yeah, join us over there. Continue to join us here, because here we're going to be talking about lanterns.
Let's talk about season 1 episode 2. It's called Trustfall, and I listened to the official podcast, and apparently the reason for it being called Trustfall was that originally this episode, Hal woke up Jon Stewart, instead of throwing ice on him, was hanging him over a waterfall and being like, today's going to be the day we teach you how to fly. And that got revised out, but it did give the episode its name. I still think it's a fine, more metaphorical title for the episode about
there is
who
trust.
We, the audience, we're supposed to trust and who John's supposed to trust.
Yeah, I would say the trust levels are falling.
Yeah, absolutely. All around. This was written by Vanessa Baden Kelly and Chris Mundy, one of the showrunners, and directed by James Hawes, who also directed the pilot. We are back on the main timeline in 2016 Nebraska, and it's time for a flying lesson, and it's also time for our heroes to split up. Hal sends John to his curiously gaudy house in Coast City to pick up his lantern and feed his alien murder plant, Earl. Meanwhile, Hal continues his investigation into the football field murders, which includes breaking into the morgue, stealing a bunch of dead alien bodies, and dragging them around until he discovers a network of alien detectors. John's task gets interrupted when he gets distracted digging through Hal's closet, and when he gets kidnapped by aliens trying to recruit him in the tracking down of a manhunter who they believe to be hiding in Rushville. They also inject John's mind with an avalanche of terrible memories about what happens when a manhunter comes to town. Much like Andor, a season 1 over on Disney Plus, downloading a genocide into somebody's mind is a very taxing way of doing things in sci-fi land.
Sure. It's like getting on TikTok in 2023.
Hal's path takes him to a contentious town meeting, then back to Papa Garrett Dillahunt's ranch, where he gets himself shot. Sheriff Kane, gonna have to talk about this week, who tags along with Hal and reveals she's originally from Gotham, is not pleased. She also has questions about Sinestro, who appears to have a Wikipedia page on Earth. On his way back into town, John has another encounter with Mrs. Macon, who almost explains what's up with her marriage, and has a lot to say about a trusting, difficult white dudes. After returning to the motel, John tells Hal everything about the aliens, despite the fact they told him not to. This sends Hal jetting off into space, wearing his uniform, to an icy prison planet to visit his purplest frenemy, Sinestro. Hal wants information about manhunters. Sinestro wants to know more about John Stewart. And the audience gets credits and a week to talk about what we actually saw. Mm-hmm. Oh, and John spends the entire episode concentrating on a manifested bird, proving he can keep the constructs going even without the ring on. Hoorah, indeed. Oh boy, Neil, there's a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
Sure.
I think to encourage people to interact with us, we're just going to go straight to the Ravens.
Okay.
And then you and I could discuss what we need to talk about.
Sure.
But let's, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Let us know what you're thinking about lanterns. John's wanted to do a bit of age discourse. First, about whether John would go for an older lady. And second, the curiously small age gap between Garrett Dillahunt and his alleged son and daughter-in-law. Neil.
Yeah. I summarized this one for our listener, John. So that we didn't get him in any trouble here. But he was seemingly wondering how it is that a strapping tall, dark, and handsome guy like Jon Stewart would go for a much older woman. And I was confused by that because, of course, he would. She's a babe. And that's doesn't seem to be much of an issue. You know, these lanterns, they're like sailors. They're ready to go at any port. But the more important point, I think, is the second one, which is about how apparently Garrett Dillahunt is playing the father-in-law of Kelly MacDonald and the father of Jason Ritter, mm-hmm. which I think is maybe intentional by the show to show us that there's something off about this dude or this entire yeah. family or anybody who's in this town who's not originally from outside this town, which they establish for the sheriff this week that she's not originally from here. There's something weird about this town, and maybe it has something to do with the fact that people don't age quite as quickly as you would think. So are they aliens? Maybe. Would that make Kelly MacDonald's child a half alien? Would that explain why he's so good at football in 2026? Maybe.
I mean, I guess the question to me is, how many of them are real at all?
Okay.
I think
none of them are going to the hospital. We know that much.
Yeah. I think part of the wife and her like odd marriage with Macon and her sort of like ability to be free is a classic detective red herring misdirect, because it would be these manhunters. If we are to believe the information that was spoken aloud on screen, and I think we might as well, because it seems like everybody, as soon as they hear about it, at least take it very seriously. While they're in human form or vulnerable to things that humans are vulnerable to.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that means you want to be somebody that is protected, but also not drawing a lot of fire. So mm-hmm. Macon makes like a really obvious, you know, like I could be the manhunter, and he's walking around being like, the people that walked this land before me didn't see the settlers coming. And he doesn't say the Native Americans or say a certain tribe. He said the people that came before me, and he could be talking about the people of Macon. And sure. He's already come in and rolled over them with his, I don't know, super automaton. So it's like, on one hand, the manhunters would, if they become human, they literally become human, they would need doctors. If they are a bunch of androids hiding a manhunter somewhere in town, then maybe they don't need doctors. Maybe they don't need metal detectors, because everyone's going to go off in a metal detector. They need alien detectors. And these sorts of things would allow parts of the town to sort of be integrated, I think, without necessarily. I love the idea that the whole town is somehow the manhunter, like the manhunter is like spread or there's a colony. But I also don't feel, like you said, like the kid is going to end up being half alien, because I don't like the implications that Carrie Kane didn't know that she was in a relationship with the manhunter. If the whole town knows where the manhunter is and has made some sort of deal with them, I need Carrie Kane to have done that with her eyes open, not with like necessarily being lied to, because I think that's weird and gross. And I think kind of out of step with how everybody's acting at this point.
Sure.
But I do think we are getting thrown into a situation where, like you were saying and joking correctly, in an episode where we're kind of wondering who we can trust. I kind of think it's nobody, because mm-hmm. this type of mystery show is going to show us the correct answer to the question. Like, I think we have seen the manhunter, or whoever the manhunter has been impersonating by this point in the series already. But I don't think we have enough information to really scout it out. So anyone who seems really obvious now, I just have a red herring, like hair up when I'm thinking about them. I don't know if I could make like a solid call on who the manhunter is.
Well, and I think this leads me to Pat's email, which is a bit of a theory and a bit of a counterpoint to go all for this. Pat says the easy conclusion would be that William Macon is being supported by the hidden Manhunter, and Macon is protecting it from the alien revenge-seeking bone bombers. Nice term. And the Manhunter gave Macon the technology for the alien detectors and other tech we don't know about yet. But it's too early in the season to draw those conclusions. I'm just saying that I don't trust the alien bald guy who abducted Jon Stewart, literally messed with Jon's brain, and is threatening to blow up a town of innocents just to get one target. We're told that Manhunters could infiltrate other races, and these guys seem to pass as human, but they exhibit crazy strength when tossing John around in that van, and of course have wild technology, aka the memory insertion gun. So these guys could easily just be Manhunters hunting a target that the Green Lanterns were originally trying to protect by taking to a backwater, uninteresting planet like the Witness Protection Program. So I feel like Pat is like, but what if the other guys were the Manhunters? And I cannot disprove either theory at this point. So it's an interesting question. It's at a certain point, someone's going to have to hit us with their intergalactic passport information and tell us what planet they're from.
Yes.
And then we'll know. But I mean, I guess that would be an interesting reversal, which is like the people saying they're coming after a Manhunter are actually Manhunters looking for someone else. But everybody else in the town is an alien.
The only thing that makes me think this isn't true is my limited knowledge of the comics. But let's say we throw that out. Let's say in an adaptation, they're going to change that. That sure. means I also don't know if we could completely trust Jon Stewart. To throw all the way back to Jon's question about like, would he go for an older lady or whatnot? That question really is about what value structure does John have? Mm-hmm. We know he has a value structure that is based around being a good Green Lantern and not having fear.
Right. And following the chain of command.
We don't know if that necessarily makes a good guy. So I think in terms of the, you can't trust anybody at this point, I think at some point we should also be paranoid about what John's motivations are. I think this episode does a good job of clearing it up when he finally talks to Hal outside the motel in one of the final scenes of the episode. But leading up to that, we don't really know like if he's going to keep it from Hal. You know, he has the conversation with the wife that is very interesting and I feel like could go either way. And so I don't think we know much about John as a person, but I do think we're going to learn about that. I think this episode just instills doubt in everybody.
Sure. Well, and I mean, so far, the first two episodes have positioned us to be weary of Hal Jordan, not in the sense that we don't think he's, capable, but mm-hmm. in the sense that we don't entirely know what his motivations are here. Right. Like, I think we want to like Hal Jordan, but everything else is kind of telling us that maybe there's something wrong with this guy.
Yeah, I really like the little bits of Hal Jordan's life we get a glimpse into here. First, putting him on a side quest and letting Kyle Chandler sort of express his version of the hero without necessarily having to take on like the father partner role. Mm-hmm. I think he is incredibly fun. The why isn't he using the ring more makes complete sense with a guy who just doesn't think they're going to shoot him when they do shoot him this episode.
Sure.
Like a lot of the questions
he's had worse guns pointed at him in his life at this point.
Exactly. So like I get the idea that he does sort of like have a death wish, but also that just like reads as like a certain character trait that reads very good as the Hal Jordans I've come to understand him is he's not super worried about the surface level threats to him because he has a tap on the whatever the greater threat is, and that's actually what he's trying to root out. Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot more sense, and it makes a lot more character sense that he doesn't wear the uniform that much, and then suddenly something spooks him enough and he does. And in terms of like a production of television theory, Neil, the trailer of Lanterns had like a yellowish brown suit in Kyle Chandler's closet. And then here in this episode, it is very green. And then the behind the scenes that follows immediately after the episode, we see the suit and it is very green. Did they change the color in the trailer to try to give us like visual hints that this is like an aged Hal Jordan that has been like through some shit? Is it supposed to be like a dirtied suit and not a yellowed suit? Or did they do something to like kind of drain the green out of the trailer and cause that uproar it did cause amongst Green Lantern fans?
Sure.
They're like, what the hell is this? Even though when they knew they were coming out with like a Moog doesn't socialize, you know, Easter egg for about a living planet lantern. And like, they're not shying away from the silly stuff this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could be a little bit of both. I mean, I also think it could have a lot to do with like compression of when you upload video to the internet. It can it can at times suck the color out of things, but maybe it's one of those things where the color correction wasn't perfect, or they were trying to push it closer to that sort of yellowish gray hue situation that they had with True Detective, because they were really, really pushing the True Detective stuff hard, right?
Yeah,
because I think that is, just from a marketing standpoint, an easier way to market this series than a colorful Green Lantern show.
Absolutely.
And that's why, you know, it did really well first week, because they may have duped some people into showing up for a superhero show by being like, look, it's kind of True Detective with Kyle Chandler, but he's got a weird ring. So yeah, I think maybe they pushed it a little too far, but then when they watched the trailer, they were like, that's fine. Let people talk. You know, like let people argue over that. That to me feels like a Damon Lindelof comment from the back of the room being like, you know what, maybe let's see what they have to say about this. Like, let's just let this ride. Because he's in a much more, I would say, not adverse place with the audience, but in a much more comfortable place trolling the audience than he was, let's say, in 2009. You know, this is an evolution that we have a certain amount of scholarship in Damon Lindelof's desire to engage with trolling the audience itself. So I think that's fine, because it seemingly worked, right? People were up in arms. The first episode did really well, got great ratings. And here we are, episode two, and it's very green. And so now all of the hardcore Green Lantern heads are like, well, I guess it was green the whole time. It's like that dress from a couple of years ago on social media where everybody thought it was blue. Yeah. And some people thought it was, I forget the other. Was it blue or green? Doesn't matter.
But it was black and blue. And oh,
black gold and gold and, or blue and something.
Yeah. Anyway.
Either way.
Yeah.
It looks green now.
It looks green in now. In the episode. Mogo doesn't socialize, as I briefly mentioned before. That is a reference to an extremely old Green Lantern comic that had a story called Mogo Doesn't Socialize. But basically, Mogo is a Green Lantern sentient planet. It's a living planet that is also a Green Lantern. And the phrase Mogo Doesn't Socialize is because like there's a meeting of the Green Lanterns, and everyone's like, why doesn't Mogo come to the meeting of the Green Lanterns? Because he's a planet, so he would like disrupt the gravity of the situation if he shows up to hang out. So that's why Mogo doesn't socialize.
They got sentient planets in this superhero story too, for anyone who's seen Guardians of the Galaxy, is the second one.
And then I also like the Wikipediaing of like, oh, so Sinestro, you know, did a little revolution that you put down. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. And I guess this does actually kind of track with the vibes of the Superman movie, which is like a lot of this is very established and well reported on Earth. Right. Yeah. They seem to know a lot about the Green Lantern. Like, no one is freaking out that Guy Gardner is there in the Superman movie. So I guess it would make sense that they have a certain amount of chronicles of what Hal Jordan does when he leaves Earth. And I think that's kind of cool. And I think that this is one of the storytelling things that I like that they're doing with the DCU, which is it's just a matter of these things being already established, already fleshed out. They don't feel like, you know, they have to do a little origin for everybody. Like, we probably aren't going to get a whole Sinestro backstory episode now that Kelly MacDonald has read his Wikipedia page out loud, which is fine because we don't need to tread that water over and over and over again. I like that this world, again, every time we step into it, the James Gunn DCU feels lived in to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And doesn't feel like it has to start at zero with every single character. I mean, there, as we'll talk about, I'm sure there are some characters we're going to need some origin story on. And his name is John Stewart, but everybody else, I get it, right? We get Hal Jordan's deal. We kind of get Sinestro here with, you know, a couple lines of dialogue. So it's working. It's very efficient storytelling.
Yeah. And then we have Kelly Kane, who says she's originally from Gotham, and then was pointed out by Screen Crush that last week's episode, she was like, say hi to Barb for me while talking to somebody on the phone. So I chuckled to myself now, because Martha Wayne is a Kane. The Kane family is big in Gotham. So Kelly being a Kelly Kane, who mm-hmm. also knows Barbara Gordon, really points to Kelly somehow being directly Carrie related Kane. To Martha.
Kelly Carrie. Is playing Carrie Kane.
Kelly is playing Carrie.
They could have just named her Kelly.
They could have just named her Kelly. That would have been fine with it. So Carrie Kane.
But I love that.
Carrie Kane and Martha Kane could be related, in which case Carrie Kane would really be related to Martha Wayne.
Sure.
So it's another example of like the universe being lived in, because apparently there's already a Barbara Gordon over there in Gotham solving cases while the Green Lantern stuff's going on, which mm-hmm. I think is fun. Also fun inside Hal Jordan's house, there are a bunch of pictures of him with celebrities, all things that technically start with P and then Ferris Bueller. So
the Ferris Bueller joke comes later.
The Ferris Bueller joke does come later. All the pictures, I think, are people with P's. If you count President Barack Obama and President George W. Bush as both presidents. Mm-hmm. We also have him with Pope. I think it's Leo.
It would be Pope. Oh, is
John
that Pope?
Paul II?
Wait, is that Pope Leo? No, Pope Leo's the new one, right?
Okay, so it would have been John Paul II. It would have been the 90s Pope.
Or the guy after him.
Or the maybe the guy after him. The
remember.
German guy.
I don't even remember his name.
There's a Pope. Pope Neil Benedict? And I, neither and I, super active Catholics.
I mean, extremely lapsed at this point. Although the new Pope's kind of cool. He's an American. That's what I know.
The Chicago Pope.
The Chicago Pope. I've heard. He likes deep dish. And Jesus.
And then Hal Jordan on the red carpet with the Harry Potter cast, which adds a little bit of flavor to his what school did Harry Potter question go to question from last week, mm-hmm. which also is kind of funny because this week began the sort of HBO very gentle pushback on reminding you that Harry Potter exists and maybe you might not be as mad as it as you thought.
We'll see. Is the reason why Hal Jordan doesn't live an open public life at this point that he got canceled for being friends with J.K. Rowling?
He got canceled because he's got gender essentialist views.
Tweeted that he agrees with her, and that's why he's hiding out in Nebraska.
Well, one of the fun things is that while this episode was ending, HBO immediately was like, hey, you might like Watchmen, because HBO doesn't know who I am and that I'm deeply familiar with HBO's Watchmen.
Sure.
And my girlfriend Java, we were watching it together. She's like, why does Damon Lindelof keep doing shows about cops? And I'm like, if you think Watchmen is pro cop, you need to watch Watchmen. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you think this like series is going to be like, yeah, the Green Lantern system is probably what all the galaxy should have, I do not think that's how this season is going to end.
Sure.
So to loop all the way back to what Pat was saying, I don't think I could trust any of these people. I think we're getting information that I mostly trust, but I don't think we're getting the total story of any of that information.
Sure.
I think we are very specifically not shown flashes of whatever John was shown, mm-hmm. because that would end up tipping the hand to something that we're going to have clarified to us later. And we get the double bonus of TV watcher language, where we take this guy who has been raised since a small child to not be afraid. And the first time we see him be afraid and yell in some sort of pain isn't when he's being like having his ass kicked in a van by aliens or chased down a highway. It's when he's, you know, having his mind super downloaded with a version of alien history. Right. That I'm sure we're going to get the other side of the history of.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know who knows it.
You know, before we get off of this who can we trust question.
Yeah.
My guess, based on what I assume are their long-term plans for the DCU, is that we want to exit this series having some sort of trust in Jon Stewart. But I think that that may come with, first of all, we'll know more once we get his origin story. But also, I think that that will come with a fairly significant character arc here in this first season, where we're going to have to go along on this journey to eventually be like, oh, yeah, Jon Stewart is the good guy. Or maybe he's not. I don't know. And maybe he's the villain of the next Justice League.
I doubt it
based on what I know about Green Lantern lore.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be the villain in the next Justice League, but I do think the sort of like question, the fact that he doesn't question any sort of authority is what we have to knock down one way or the other.
Right.
Whether we could trust him in either the Manhunter hunt or the eventual murder plot of Hal Jordan. Like, we don't know what happens in the end of the 2016 plot. For all we know, the Manhunter blows up the town and takes Jon Stewart's form. Like, that's still a possibility. We're dealing with lots of alien species.
That's why he has a goatee now, because like he's evil.
Exactly. but also, it appears like there's something about Jon Stewart that is a problem. Sinestro certainly seems to think he's a bigger threat than like the Manhunter. And you and I, once again, know from the comics Sinestro's wrong, but the show, it has the capability of adding some nuance to that if they would
Well, yeah, and it there could be something more to it. There could be a more nuanced answer there as to why Sinestro thinks John is a threat. It could just be that Sinestro is like picking at the wound that's clearly on the surface for Hal Jordan, which is he doesn't want to have a replacement. You know,
yeah,
he doesn't seem to want to be much of a Green Lantern, but he also doesn't seem to want to hand it off to the next guy for whatever reason. And, you know, I think these are questions that the show wants us asking at this point, which is fine. We're only two episodes.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Appreciate with the appropriate amount of frustration how much I'm depending on how Kyle Chandler reacts to stuff to guess what Hal Jordan's going through. But I also think by the end of, I don't know, I would say even like a couple more episodes, I'm going to have a much clearer idea
Of exactly
how many parties are even at play here and which one I feel like should be trustable. Right now, if I had to pick a single character, I guess it's Carrie Kane. I really like her.
She seems, well, and she's maybe the only, assuming she's telling us the truth, she's maybe the only person in this town who's not part of whatever weird conspiracy shit is going on in this town or isn't an alien. So I think that's, I'm kind of on her side, even though ACAB applies to sheriffs as well. But honestly, it's funny because last week we did most True Detective thing about this episode. This is the most True Detective thing about this episode, which is that we've now spent a good portion of the podcast talking about whether we can trust anyone. Are any of these people the good guy? Maybe not.
Very probably
she's
not.
She's the closest we have so far to someone who's good, but just because she's from Gotham doesn't mean she's good. In fact, most people from Gotham are bad, except for that. Even Batman's got some cancelable qualities.
Well, we don't know what the state what state Batman's gonna enter this universe, so he could just start cancelable and ride through that way. We'll see how it goes. I really like this episode. I trust, again, like I said, I think everything that has been said out loud is like a version of the truth. But the most artful thing I think about this episode is the bird. because the longer the bird sticks around and the conditions under which the bird sticks around, and then the nonchalantness with which John dismisses it as not that big of a deal, I think is a really smart television, because it allows us to have what otherwise would be a grounded action scene, like a spy or a 24 sort of scene with like a couple ratchet pulls and some like car crashes, and has a constant reminder that we're still in the superhero show. Mm-hmm. I think it gets close to, without being silly, the thing that I was alluding to sort of jokingly at the end of last week's Storm section, where it's like, we're in a version of the DCU that is very animal adjacent. Mm-hmm. They like adding an animal in where it is.
Sure.
And I guess we'll talk about it a little bit more in the Storm, but there is a sort of like way they're signaling this, where the way Hal reacts to it, the way the captors eventually react to it, and then the way John doesn't react to it is pointing to something that they are adapting from like very, very recent comics.
Sure.
And not necessarily adapting from older comics.
And I would say, from the vibe that I'm getting from, you know, some more hardcore Green Lantern fans of like the deep comic lore, this is honestly potentially a more canon shaking thing than his suit being slightly off color in the trailer. So I think that's fun. They again, using other things to divert us away from something the show may give us with significant substance, which is the implication that John can manifest things, or at least hold them, without the ring, which, you know, now that I think back to episode one, I'm like, well, yes, John with the goatee could be a evil body snatched version, or maybe the reason he doesn't have the ring is because he doesn't need the ring.
Very possible. It's going to be interesting to figure out exactly what that is, but I do think in a show that otherwise is a lot of detectiving and some great work from some of the actors who are playing the various characters within it, like, has this pretty amazing piece of canon in it that if you are like a huge Green Lantern fan, and that bird doesn't go away when he takes off the ring and Hal Jordan sort of like hesitates, you're like, oh, hey, that's what this series could be about. And we're going to have to see if that's how the show wants to like follow it up. Mm-hmm. If like we could be being told that we're doing like a Manhunter hunt, but maybe the Manhunter hunt is over in like three more episodes, and that's not what we're even concerned about in 2026. We're concerned about, what does this mean? That shouldn't be possible. If that is a thing life forms can do, then what does that mean for the universe? Can't wait to find out. Neil, I'm really itching to get into some identities. I think some of these people are, but I think it's the Stormy thing. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you think we should squeeze into the call before we pass off?
Well, listen, to round out our list of manifestations, we have Hal flying twice, or I guess in two different ways, his terrestrial flight and his interstellar flight, both of which he can do just like Carol Danvers in the opposing universe, just kind of by himself with his ring. And then nothing for the Bad Dad Barometer this week, because we only get sort of Garrett Dillahunt just being a cowboy, which isn't really bad dad stuff. But I suspect, especially because we're about to talk about it in the Storm, that next week we're about to get a whole lot of bad dad stuff.
It does.
The bad dad faucet is about to open.
A lot of bad dad stuff. Let's talk about it in the Storm.
As one of my gut always told me, that crash was no accident. When it says there's a shitstorm en route, I make sure there's a lookout to tell me when it's fucking coming.
All right, Neil, I couldn't talk about a lot of this episode. And I also think that Pat, who does a really good job at knowing what he's talking about when he's sending an email, purposely played dumb here. What do you know about the Red Lanterns?
I mean, as I explained last week, I know that they exist.
Yeah. So the backstory that
I know that this character, there's a whole rainbow of lanterns.
This backstory, this character who is named in the subtitles, I think it's something like Atten, gives to John Stewart is the backstory of Sector 666, where Manhunters basically genocided an entire sector, except for one guy who was really, really mad about it, who became the first Red Lantern called Atrocitus. Thank you. Atrocity.
Yep. That makes sense.
And his motivation is vengeance, which is what the alien said pinned up against the glass in episode one.
Right. And the Red Lantern, from my light research last week, is anger.
Yeah, anger, rage.
He's the angry lantern. So
he is the founder of that. He and five other survivors of Sector 666 are on a mission to hurt the Guardians, because they learn in their pursuing of the Manhunters that the Guardians coded them bad, essentially, and Sector 666 could have been saved if the Guardians were a little bit more vigilant.
Sure.
So what you have is
unfortunate for Pat's theory. I think
it's unfortunate for Pat's theory, but here there are five goons. When they have him, tied up in a chair, when they have John Stewart tied up in a chair, they have the main talkie guy in the center, and then the five goons placed around. There's so many visual things here, plus the backstory pairing up that says that's Atrocitus, and he's part of the Red Lantern Corps. Mm-hmm. So to people who are familiar with that version of the backstory, that is very interesting. Also, Atrocitus was hunting Manhunters, and in a certain reversion of the origin of Hal Jordan, Abon Sur, the Lantern before Hal Jordan, was carrying Atrocitus, and Atrocitus broke out, and that's what caused Abon Sur to crash. But here in the show, it appears like the Manhunter was taken prisoner by Abon Sur after wiping out Sector 666, and instead of executing him, something happened. He crashed in Nebraska. That's where the Manhunter has been since now.
Sure. And the Guardians have been covering it up.
And the Guardians have been covering up.
Yeah. I like this.
Also
goes with our theory of why they didn't call it Green Lantern, the show, because it's about many colors of lanterns. And I think, we kept saying last week, and we sort of hinted at it in the column this week, that maybe this is a contained story of Rushville that we're on here for maybe the first half of the season, and then shit's going to get very cosmic and very wild in the back half. And I feel like the reveal of there being a Red Lantern would definitely be a cosmic thing that would happen in the back half of the season.
It could be fun. That could be these Manhunters that we are looking at. And then everybody knows, or at least everybody who's semi-familiar with Arch Green Lantern lore, or say watch the post-credits scene of the 2011 Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds. Sinestro does harness the power of the yellow light to form the Sinestro Corps, aka a yellow lantern. So it is possible that we got both our Sinestro yellow debut and the Red Lantern debut. It doesn't matter because they're adapting it, so the show's going to have to tell us. But the fact that Sinestro already did his uprising, I think his uprising was Hal and him were friends and they were Green Lantern together. Mm-hmm. And then Hal visited Sinestro's sector, and it turns out he was keeping order through fear and not through his Green Lantern powers.
Sure. This actually leads us into our spoiler, our Stormy Raven. Dave.
Yeah, go for it.
This is perfect because it gets us into some Sinestro. This one comes from Phelan, longtime listener, longtime writer. Phelan says, in episode one, when John is on the phone with his dad telling him that Hal tried to kill him, his father says, he can't kill you. I didn't think much of it at the time, but in retrospect, it may be a clue. For the majority of Green Lantern's comic run, the ring cannot be used for deadly force, as in if it detects lethal intent, it will deactivate it, which is ironic that it has been referred to as a weapon of mass destruction in the show. And then the creative team likened it to a cop pulling their gun. I dispute the ring being a weapon at all, but a tool. I'm going to come back to this, but I need to talk about Sinestro. They mentioned it being unusual for a Lantern to, quote, train within their own sector. Canonically, Hal is sent to train under Sinestro, considered by the Guardians as one of the best and brightest in the Corps, on his home planet, Korugar. What Hal found is that Sinestro had been ruling over his entire sector like a fascist. Hal Serpicode slash training day'd his ass to the bosses. Sinestro was stripped of his ring, and one of the leaders of Korugar's resistance, Katma Tui, was chosen as Sinestro's replacement in the Corps. She would also go on to have a romantic relationship with Jon Stewart. Notable. I really want to see her in this show. I need some black on purple love in my life. Thank you, Phelan, for that one. I'm assuming she's purple as well. Yeah. Okay. This Sinestro apparently staged a coup. What I want to know is what specifically he's locked up for. Was the coup and killing the Guardian in his last act as a Lantern, or did he already have the yellow ring that is built for lethality? There's a lot of narrative differences between those points in his villain arc. Without getting too deep into the weeds on the Sinestro Corps war, the fallout of having a fear-powered army savagely massacre half the Lantern Corps, was the Guardians changed the laws in the Book of Oa to allow Lanterns to kill. Once Sinestro was defeated, you find out his goal was always to make the Guardians change the Lantern Corps to be more in line with his vision, peace through fear. So my big question is, can the rings kill in this continuity? And if they can we completely rule out Hal pulling a Life of David Gale and being the one who killed himself with a construct, like a last act of protest against the Guardians? This is all very interesting, and obviously I'm now going to be very obsessed with whether or not the ring can kill. But I think the bigger question that it raises is, where on Sinestro's general arc are we? Are we just in the first period where he has, maybe been discovered to be a fascist by Hal Jordan and then locked up, and he hasn't done his revenge against the Lantern Corps yet, and that's something we're going to see? Or is he further along and we're seeing a Sinestro that has already murdered a bunch of Green Lanterns and has already done the yellow ring thing? I mean, he's wearing a prison uniform, so we kind of can't tell, but I have a feeling there's more to it than that.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see where he is on his arc. And I think Phelan's very correct that, like, we kind of don't know, and the show hasn't given us enough time to figure out. I suspect, at least in this arc, if we're doing this arc about Manhunters, like I said in the calm, I think we're doing the disillusionment with the Guardians this season. Mm-hmm. That, like, you know, whatever happened between Sinestro and Hal is probably around, like, say, 2006, when he stopped backing himself up with the ring because he, like, doesn't trust the Guardians. Like, Sinestro had a point and Hal had to put him down because he's, like, doing it wrong. But, you know, Sinestro had some sort of point. It could be, I think that's where we're going. But whether that means we're going to speed run to, at some point, Sinestro puts on a yellow ring because we're already that far through it.
Sure.
I think is likely. I mean, possible.
If this show is walking itself into we're going to make you think it's a Green Lantern show and turn it into a show about all the Lantern Corps, then yeah, I think that's something you would want to save to show in this show, which is Sinestro. Maybe it's a season two thing, maybe it's a season one thing, I don't know. But him embracing the yellow ring and embracing the sort of notion that one of the Lanterns needs to be able to kill somebody every once in a while.
It would also, and so the one thing that we might get towards actually answering Phelan's second question is, if Albin Sur took the Manhunter to be executed and, you know, it broke out during flight and he crashed, then that means the entire time he was taking it to be executed because he couldn't kill it. Mm-hmm. Like, that wasn't within his powers, like a Green Lantern.
He was aiming for taking him to Texas, where they'd just kill you for whatever.
But if it's more complicated than that and say the rings can kill, he chose not to kill him for some reason, either because he needed him as evidence against the Guardians, he needed him to like stand some sort of like intergalactic trial, or because he was given some sort of secret, initiative like Birkin aliens to bring back one of the samples of these, things mm-hmm. rather than hold them all to account. I don't know, but if the ring can't kill, then I think it's more likely that Avanser was just doing his job and transferring a dangerous prisoner, and we're not going to find a sympathetic Manhunter. I think there is a very likely possibility that the Manhunter that we have on Earth, for some reason, it has been allowed to live for a reason. Sure. When you give someone a deal for snitching on your friends.
Well, there are sympathetic Manhunters, right? Isn't Martian Manhunter?
He's not a Guardian Manhunter. No,
he's a different kind of Manhunter.
Yeah. He's like a bounty hunter. Yeah, but he's a Martian.
He's a victim of a Holocaust. Man, everybody gets genocided in these stories. That's rough.
I mean, that happens when you take your story like super big and in a universe where like Superman can't die. Sometimes you gotta yada yada genocide. We saw it in Tron Legacy. All right. I don't have to harp on that. So I think we have some lanterns on the side here, but I think the mm-hmm. most interesting thing about the bird is something that I learned while looking up this episode and doing some Wikipedia-ing. But apparently, newest comics, Jon Stewart is able to make constructs without a ring. Mm-hmm. And I think this one, I don't know if we're building to that or if this adaptation is just allowed to maintain constructs without a charge. I think is also super interesting because how it comes up in this episode is like he tries to fly. He makes a bird. Mm-hmm. They're like, the ring's about to run out of battery. Hal is like, if you hit it flush, you get a little bit more. He hits it flush to like ring 5%. Hal gets out of the car later in the episode, floats for like 2 seconds, and that's the ring's out of battery.
Sure.
So like the amount of power it could have taken to like make a bird.
So it's got about the same battery consistency as like my at this point 8-year-old iPhone when it's like 10% dead.
Dead. Sorry, I used it. Which is why I'm like, maybe they presented that this way because it's not like he can manifest without the ring, because I do think, like you mentioned, he's going to be a man of tomorrow too. Superman had a Green Lantern. They kind of explained what the ring was. I think he would have another one show up and just be like, this is Green Lantern, and avoid the problem that I think Marvel had, which is making a TV show feel like homework for a movie. Mm-hmm. So I think like he has to, if he shows up, if he's Jon Stewart, he has to have the suit and he has to have the ring. And if he does that, we immediately accept him as a character, whatever he has to do is a cameo. So my guess is maybe they tweaked it so that he just has the capability to maintain. Sure. Like, you still need the ring to focus it, but he doesn't need to be lanterning and giving the oath and stuff like Hal does.
Sure.
He can use his own charge.
At least from what we know of this show so far, they are trying to establish Jon Stewart as having something special about him that Hal doesn't have, right? Like, I found it interesting that, in the description on YouTube for the Next Week On trailer on the official HBO Max channel, is the description was Jon Stewart was born for this, right? And the trailer itself shows a lot of Jon Stewart as a baby with green all over him. So the idea that maybe he has been manufactured what do they call that when people like go in and like choose things about their baby? Bioengineered? In some way? That's not what it's called. It's not bioengineering. It's like genetic engineering. Yeah. So like there's some sort of genetic engineering that went into, because, you know, we were curious in the first episode why John's father was training him basically to have no fear. And it was like, is this just a guy who thinks that his kid should be the Green Lantern, or has he already been chosen? I feel like next week's trailer suggests that he was chosen at or before birth. So maybe there's some sort of something the Guardians did to John's DNA when he was a single cell that put him on a path to be able to take over. It's not that they just like did a worldwide talent search and found the right kid. This is something that he's been sort of engineered to do. And one of the consequences of that might be that he comes out a little different than a more organic human lantern would, like Hal Jordan, where he was just a dude and now he's got a ring. So I think that I think you could be right that they're tweaking it a little bit, and that maybe he won't be like a full on Green Lantern out without his ring, but that he has some obviously more heightened abilities than Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
He's a GMO lantern.
Of the theories I've collected from reading other people's online, the one that leaps out to me because it feels the most Lindelof about what we might get next week is the idea that the ring has a certain like code where it tries to find like the nearest worthy person mm-hmm. when its user is dying. And so what if it went to John Stewart's dad, but because he had just had John Stewart's dad was literally afraid for the first time in his life because he was afraid for his family. Mm. And so the ring's like, cool. And then zips off. And then, you know, John Stewart's dad's like, what the hell was that? And then all of a sudden, like a couple of months later, Hal Jordan's strolling out being like, I'm King Space Cop, and, you know, getting interviewed on TV and everything. And he's like, oh, that was supposed to be me. I'm going to make sure my son doesn't do this, and sacrifices having a real relationship for his son to force him into the mold of becoming like a Green Lantern. That sounds lost to me. So that sounds like
he becomes very, a bad dad to save us all.
And I like the idea that also because the ring did come to him and did judge him worthy at some point, and he kind of answered a question wrong, that maybe the Guardians are aware of him, and maybe the Guardians helped make John Stewart because they were like, hey, we don't think the ring always chooses best either. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, maybe we should appoint maybe we should appoint sidekicks here.
I mean, that is, you know, I've not read all of the Hal Jordan comics, obviously, but that is sometimes the thing about Hal Jordan, is that people in the Green Lantern Corps regret that he was chosen because he kind of sucks.
He does. And the idea also that somebody brought up, I think it was Tom King said it on the podcast, the official podcast for episode one, but that Guy Gardner has the ring in 2026. They're like, mm-hmm. it's not a thing because like Guy Gardner has the ring. He says Guy Gardner has the ring. That was his quote, which makes sense to me because, again, if the user dies, the ring's going to go to the next closest worthy person. Mm-hmm. And at least in the comics, the ring chose Hal Jordan, and then its backup was going to be Guy Gardner. And that's how Guy Gardner becomes like the second Green Lantern.
I mean, maybe they are going to go full on John Stewart doesn't need a ring to be Green Lantern.
Well, I think it's more likely that Guy Gardner shows up and gives him the ring, where he's like, I know this isn't how it works anymore because I got my ring like through another process. Like, you know, Guy Gardner, the way he appears in Superman, seems like a bit more of an asshole. And I imagined him to do that, and we've seen him on the seasons on, basically coming to John in prison. But I almost feel like he's going to like show up and be like, here's the ring. Like, the system says it's supposed to be for you. you can't trust these fucking rings. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't know you've been training or some such or whatever it is. That's the ring that fucked over your dad. Or when we'll have a moment. And I do think Jon Stewart will get the ring. But I also think it did go to Hal Jordan, because who's telling the ring that Jon Stewart's the next, you know, Green Lantern? Mm-hmm. I don't even know how that works. I just don't think we believe that the Guardians...
But do we believe that at the end of this story that Guy Gardner and Jon Stewart will both be Green Lanterns?
Yes.
So there's two rings eventually.
Yes. I think just off screen, they're going to mention that they got upgraded to two lanterns per sector, which is the way it works in most DC adaptations after Superman came to Earth and they was a lot more extraterrestrial.
Unless... this within the eight episodes of this first season, they're going to kill off Nathan Fillion. That would be something, but also something James Gunn would do to one of his best friends.
Yeah. But it would be interesting because
is he confirmed to be in World of Tomorrow, Man of Tomorrow,
Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know. I assume so because he was in the first one. But I guess I don't actually know.
That is,
I think it's interesting.
Oh yeah, he is listed as being in Man of Tomorrow, at least according to Wikipedia. So I think we have to leave this show because this takes place before that. It takes place before Superman.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we have to leave this. Well, it takes place before and after Superman, I guess, because the 2026 storyline would be after Superman.
Right.
But yeah. So I guess we're going to have to exit this show with two Green Lanterns. Neither of which is Hal Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say. There isn't really like a limit to lanterns. That's something the show's made up. So I think that's something the show could change whatever it wants. And in terms of like, these are being produced to be in the same story world.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen Guy Gardner's ring. And it's not Hal Jordan's ring. So like that, and like at first I thought maybe like the ring changes how it manifests, you know, like obviously the ring tightens if like the thing and it gets bigger if like it's wearing it on like a Kilowog finger or whatever, like the ring can change. That's like fine. But I do think once I see the lantern and the lantern has the indentation for just that ring, I'm like, oh, there are two rings. Like the I just think it's easier to just say there are two rings because there's a whole lantern core out there. I think we are having a season
this
about the
Lord
arbitrary
of the rings. There isn't just the one.
Right. We're having a season about the arbitrary rules of the ring. And I think that's also what we're going to deal with next episode. If the ring chooses Jon Stewart's father and then is like, actually no, and then chooses Hal Jordan otherwise, then it's incredibly interesting that the Guardians come back and are like, you know what, the ring system is flawed, we'll take your son, we'll make him Hal Jordan's replacement. That is an interesting change to how things were supposed to work, and it's something the show has set up and hasn't answered why it's happening this way yet. So I'm hoping Laura Linney gives me some answers next week.
I'm just happy to see Laura Linney in the trailer. Let's go.
Hell yeah. Anything else you want to talk about what we may or may not have seen this week on Lanterns?
I mean, we covered multiple lantern colors, multiple ring theory. I honestly don't think there's a whole lot. I mean, the show does seem to be slow rolling some of its mysteries, but I'm less concerned with necessarily guessing. I mean, I feel like we may have kind of nailed it with the Red Lantern thing, but like guessing who the Manhunter is, I think it's possible that it's all a red herring where it ends up being Garrett Dillahunt's character. Why would you cast Garrett Dillahunt and not make him the actual bad guy? But we'll see. I mean, it could be Jason Ritter. It could be.
I kind of like
it. Could be the wife. She could be the Manhunter.
Yeah. I don't know how, but the whole town, town's a Manhunter. Except for Kelly.
Yeah. Carrie. The whole town is a projection of the Manhunter's consciousness across multiple bodies.
It's just been there for long enough. It's been building like replicants. And it's just like,
that's true. They were, they are robots, right?
Yeah.
The Manhunters.
They build their own bodies, as it's described to us. Where it's like, that's why they don't have metal detectors, because the entire town would just be going off. They have alien detectors, because mm-hmm. that's what they sort of need. So I think that would be interesting. But I also think that goes really big, really fast. There's a world where the Manhunter mystery is like a mid-season arc thing, and we'll be done with it in two episodes, and then we'll be off to, oh, now there's yellow lanterns, now there's red lanterns. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened in 2026?
And they're all blowing up the middle of Nebraska.
And they're all blowing up the middle of Nebraska.
I mean, I'm fine with that. That sounds fun. I'm into it. I think, you know, it's not disappointing as a Damon Lindelof experience, in the sense that there are many layers of questions, and not all of the most obvious ones will be the most important ones.
Yeah. And I was sad there wasn't anything like really big that happened. I mean, granted, there was a fight scene and then a chase. I guess car chase would be the way to say it. There was a chase amongst
cars.
Don't
discount the star power of Earl, okay?
Yes.
The Earl reveal was great.
The Earl reveal is great. The fact that Earl isn't a comic anything, but I like that it's here. Like, it's the Earl, it's the bird. I think there are just some really smart decisions in this episode of television that, if you step back and look at it, was just a big geek lore dump where everyone's like, ooh, all the geeky stuff is happening. Mm-hmm. They literally
just when you thought this was just another True Detective riff and they were going away from all the silly Green Lantern lore, here it comes.
Yeah. You want some backstory? We'll just inject it into your head. All right, cool, done.
Somewhere out there is a living planet who is a Green Lantern who is just not very talkative.
Yes, another week without Chip, but we're going to be getting there eventually. I swear to God, I'm going to see that Squirrel Lantern. give it to me, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. Absolutely get back to us. The email, starwarswars@gmail.com. Thanks to Pat, who last week reminded me that I said Mogo when I think I meant Kilowog.
Yeah.
Again, being well corrected, I really appreciate. But also, hit us with these theories. I have no idea what's going on. I want to hear from you. And as always, go out there, be excellent to each other.